I'm Dr. Jamie Grant. I'm a bossy femme bottom, and this is Just Sex, Mapping Your Desire.
Welcome back. We are here with a very special guest today, and you're listening to Just Sex, Mapping Your Desire. I'm Jamie Grant, and I'm a bossy femme bottom, and I will have my guests introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Damian Pascal Domenac, and I am a service switch, attentive top, and a dominant bottom. I'm also a Santero priest.
Wow. If we had a switchboard, the phones would be, lighting up right now. I know. I'm so excited to have you here, Damian. We've been talking about doing this pod for, 3 years, maybe?
Just about, yeah.
Damian mapped a while ago in 2017 at the Creating Change Conference, but then we met again at Sex Down South, which is just a terrific conference organized by queer and trans folks in the South, BIPOC people in the South. And it's just a really interesting space. It's a sexy space. It's just really fun. And we had a wonderful conversation there. I thought we were going to do the pod right then, but here we are many years later, all the way through 2 years of the pandemic. And I'm just really excited to be able to have this conversation, because the thing that I got excited about talking to Damian all those years ago was that because of their connection to spirituality and their sexuality, they really are working on healing, I think, or talking about the spiritual sexual split. And that is that, religions often teach us that sexuality is, wrong, problematic, something to be controlled, something to be dismissed, something that is less than. And if we really are looking at trying to decolonize our spiritualities and our sexualities, we can see that that's a false dichotomy. It's a separation that serves the power structure and doesn't serve us. Damian sent along their bio, and they are a doctoral candidate in the field of Christian and social ethics, integrating Black Atlantic religious theology with decolonial and liberative theology, so that we all might rethink the ways that memory, story, and relationship create and impact our religious identities and practices. That's a big job. And do you want to say anything about your academic work before we get into our stories and talking more about our sex and our desire today?
Yeah, I think for me, I guess my work comes from having done this work of integration myself and having learned so many different kinds of codes just by having the identities that I hold, being queer, being trans, being an immigrant, understanding how language works and just understanding the ways that words have so much power. And for me, it has been such a beautiful way of connecting to my body as a trans person to know that we're beyond a duality. We're beyond that. We weren't made in a dualism. And so I think for me, that part of integration has always existed in practice, not necessarily in words. And so that's my work, is looking at dance and looking at the way embodiment takes shape as a form of spiritual practice and as a form of prayer even. And so that was my work early on, was in looking at how dance is prayer.
Wow, that's amazing. I definitely have experienced that in my life. I'm Irish. And so when I look at the Irish dance, which I see so many things in Irish culture is so colonized by the Catholics and the Protestants, really, take your pick. But, Irish dance is so much about the constraint of the body. I mean, the body barely moves while the legs are doing all kinds of things. And I would love to see some decolonial looks at how pre-Christian Irish people move their bodies as opposed to what we have now, because it feels so related to me and so related to the sexual histories of my people, which has been so constrained, so much so that I was kicked out of my family, for being queer, right? Which, just must have killed my poor Catholic mother, nearly did, But yeah, the constraints are so real. But we are not living those constraints today, which is just really an incredibly joyful thing. And one of my favorite things about the pod is to really talk about moments that we experience where we're living our best selves, our truest selves, sexually, and in this pod, thinking about it sexually and spiritually. So I wonder if you have a desire point to share with our listeners today, because we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm excited about this because it basically integrates a part of my therapy work that I was taking on at the time with my spiritual work, which to me is not at all separate, right? So as a santero, I was calling in and trying to figure out what my relationship to emotional care is through masculine bodies. And so I was really just trying to get down with cis men because that's who I desire.
Right.
But I was also not trying to objectify them, which I was doing for some time. Mm-hmm. And so that was the work that I was doing in therapy. And so what comes to mind is this, the image of the ability to take in nurture from the masculine body and yet being filled with a feminine energy.
Mm.
And so when I think of that experience, I call this entire memory basically Yemaya on 9th Street. That's the way I think about it, which we'll get to, but.
Yes, I can't wait.
Okay. So basically I was on the apps, you know.
Yep.
I was trying to figure it out because I felt this desire for more than just penetrative sex with men.
Right.
And I wanted to really understand what the block was for me. What was it? You know, is it, I mean, there's tons of history for me when it comes to masculine identity, patriarchy, and coming from Peru and coming from a very masculine Latinx colonized culture that also informs my santero practice, right? Like I can't be a high priest because I'm a trans person.
Wow.
And so there's a lot that was going into it. And for me, I was just like, yo, I just want to feel good when I'm doing this. I want to feel their bodies and feel like I'm being filled with something pleasurable beyond just the physical, you know, and I actually may want to enjoy the conversation after and, you know, like get to know them, maybe know that there's more there than just their physical body.
Yep.
And so I started messaging with, the person I call 9th Street, who lives on 9th Street. And at the time I was like, oh my gosh, that's a sign. The number 9 is amazing to me. It resonates for me. And I was like, this is cool. And one of the things that in my experiences with cis men on apps is, you know, he wasn't fetishizing me. It wasn't that. It was very much like, I'd love to get to know you. How about coffee? How about this? How about that? And of course, I'm over here like, no, I don't want that. Are you kidding me? Like coffee for like how much, an hour? No, this is what we're going to do. Right. So basically, after like a while of texting and, you know, messaging, I'm feeling okay to go about it. I was invited over. And when I went over, I was nervous, of course, you know, I'm like coming into some stranger's house on 9th Street in the Greenwich Village. And what I remember the most was this small apartment, just this hallway. And I was like, what is this place? It was like the longest hallway I could think of. And, you know, sometimes apartments are like that. And I was like, at halfway through, I was like, oh no, I made a mistake. But I had it. I got to the end. And here was this like 6'4" man who just was like larger built and a huge smile and just melted away whatever armor I came in with.
Wow.
Yeah. And smiled at me and basically said, I'm so excited to meet you.
Oh, wow.
And for some reason, I was like immediately disarmed. I was like, oh, this is a person, right? This is a person. This is not just a body. And so we talked for a little while. He was the most hospitable person that I've ever encountered as far as it like hookup.
This context,
yeah. Yeah, in this context, I mean, there were drinks, there were snacks, there was music, there was a scent, there was consent around that, right?
And, lovely.
And ultimately, you know,
I'm melting.
Right? Yes. I was like, I feel cared for it. This is strange. Mm-hmm. And also it's strange that I could allow it, right? It's strange that I'm making space for this time. And so when it was time to get down, which I was like, all right, 1, 2, 3, we're in it. This is where we're going. I'm here for it. You know, it was like, I felt the minute I walked in and saw him, part of like that, the letting go of my shell was in so many ways being swept into this like energy of positive gift, like a positive gift was here in front of me. And so when we got to bed, I was like, okay, like I trust this person for some reason. What's happening? You know, I was like kind of lost in his body. Because I was like, we were making out, I was wrapping myself around him. Ugh. But there was this mode of fluidity for us both. And I remember just closing my eyes and allowing myself to be in the waves. And when I felt waves coming forward and backwards and kind of just like being surrounded, I felt like I was like one of my favorite memories is just actually letting the ocean hold me, right? And floating.
Yes. Yes.
So I basically just like let myself go. And it was being held, like the energy was being held by the ocean. Mm-hmm. And what came up for me were images of the ocean deity was Yemaya, who is always around me. But in that moment, I was like feeling incredibly nurtured, just cared for, nurtured, held. And I think for me, it was a time when I needed that, like in the most ways. And that's kind of what I was lacking in my hookups. But with this person, I mean, like to the tiniest detail was just cared for. Ultimately, we didn't even get to penetrative sex. Because what was the most, the act of actual nurture and the act of hugging, the act of kissing and the act of presence and attention was really on our bodies, which were at this point, we were both sweaty, both just wet. And there was so much, for some reason, like the window wasn't open. So it was just like steamy and it was just our two bodies just allowing for our emotional fields to connect. And I took a nap after.
Wow.
We talked. And after meeting, after we were both like back on shore, because right. We had to talk about what just happened because it didn't happen from either of us. He didn't initiate, I didn't initiate because this was enough. It was enough. And I haven't had that experience again. And I kind of feel like there's a mode of calling that in to a certain extent.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's so interesting because when you started the story, you said you were thinking this was missing. But then when he suggested it, you were like, oh, no, no, no. We're just going to get down to business.
Right.
And then you get there. And the whole thing kind of breaks open. It's sort of like, it feels like you're, like you said, your spirit calling it in, mm-hmm. right? Calling in this experience, even when intellectually your head is telling you, no, 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 we're not going to go there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And part of it too, I think it was really interesting for me because it was a moment of me imposing to a certain extent, imposing gender on energy, right? Because I was like, I need to feel the emotional masculine. And he's not emotionally masculine. How dare I?
Ah,
Right.
So there it was, right? So your own limitations around duality, which is what you're trying to fight in your work, right? Is absolutely right there in front of you.
Absolutely. I walked in on someone whose energy is so overwhelmingly emotionally feminine. Mm. And I can't describe that other than through the ocean waves. And for my belief system, that is Yamaya, the divine right. mother. And so when the divine mother greets you emotionally, my response is, take me.
Wow. Incredible. And so this person was a one-time hookup, yes?
No. No.
Okay. So no. Say more.
Well, after that wonderful experience, we're still in touch.
Incredible.
You know, we're still in touch. And this has been almost like a decade and a half, I would say.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah, close to. But he's a wonderful person. Plugged into community is just from... It's phenomenal the ways that people show you who they are without even knowing them. And so I didn't even get to all those points of reference until afterwards when he told me, you know, I do this, I'm involved in this, I
right.
sure that I do all of these things for our community. And which even more just like filled me with so much gratitude.
Wow, really amazing. So how do you think this experience, and this is one of the questions we ask in the mapping workshop when people remember things like this and they go, oh my God, you know, here's this thing I maybe didn't keep at the fore. It sounds like you have, you know, but maybe I haven't kept it at the fore of my memory, or maybe I haven't valued it enough. You know, people often when they start writing, things come up that they just have kind of said, oh, well, just this one thing, it didn't matter that much, right? But the learning that they got was so significant, like that moment that you're talking about, it's like transformative, right? Mm-hmm. So you have kept this person and you understand the significance. How have you brought it forward, do you think, in your sexuality, desire, relationships? And is it a guidepost for you? Is it something that you think you've built on?
I think definitely, because as a trans man, it's something that is imposed upon myself as well. And so what I built from that experience was just acknowledging the hospitality that is held within the beginning of those conversations, right? The moments of consent around, oh, so like now I love actually understanding where people are at emotionally. And it's, sometimes it could be in therapy, you know, like what are right. you trying to work through? What's going on? You know, that's really what it places importance on the whole self, not just separating the body from the mind, but actually incorporating it so that you work towards the goal, which is to connect not just through like your parts, but beyond that to your souls are connecting. Right. As a spiritual leader, we're all full of souls. We're walking with souls. We're walking with our spirits and our ancestors. And so coming into a place where you can trust someone with what they bring and who they are and who's walking with them, that's like, it places importance on that for me, because I lucked out that this person had a lot of work already behind him and then ahead of him as well. And it was a moment of calling in someone like him, right? Where I was at a place where I was doing the work, and here was someone who has been doing the work and is ready for someone like me. And mind you, it's not like I came to that like after we actually had penetrative sex, because you know, what I learned from even that act in itself was we were very compatible, you know, like that was amazing, compatible sex, which is why, like, you know, first thing I did in Jersey when I got back, I was like, oh, got to hit up 9th Street, got to hit up 9th Street, you know.
That's so great. That's really great. Well, a couple of things come to mind as you're talking about it. And one is how, you know, I find so much that hookup culture, meeting people on apps, I mean, there's just like, not in the entire community, but I would say there's a strain of thought and conversation in the community about this being a meaningless place, or it being, you know, a place that only kind of less than sex can happen. You know what I mean? Like one off. Or I also really, I have a bunch of people that I've encountered over the years, and this just sort of crushes me when I have these conversations, of mostly gay men who believe that they, you know, because they hook up a lot, they've kind of wrecked themselves for relationships, or like it's they're so bad, quote unquote, at you know, a long-term relationship because they're good at that. It's like just again another duality, as though you can't be able to do both things, which I know many people who hook up all the time and have long-term relationships that they love. And you know what I mean? And like, it's just, yeah. There can be really terrible things in hookup cultures that we should avoid. You know, there are, and, you know, that when we meet those folks and we can see, you know, like I'm not going in the door, or I'm getting out of here as fast as I can, or this is going to be very limited. And there can be absolutely like transcendent, transformational things you just cannot expect in these contexts. So I really appreciate you just talking about that. And then the other thing that really struck me was, it sounds like this person, this cis person, leaning into their feminine in their sexuality. I mean, as a trans guy, I mean, you just must have a lot of pressure after you transition to just never, ever have a feminine moment. You know what I mean? That it's like in your sex, in your walking, waking life, whatever. And maybe if you could just talk about that a little, it sounds like it, you know, it was very freeing to be in this space.
Yes. Thank you so much for bringing that up, because honestly, part of my work around connecting to the emotional masculine was the fact that I was coming out of a 5-year long relationship that was abusive with a cis woman, where I had started transitioning. I started testosterone in that relationship. And here I was 5 years on testosterone, really identifying with this masculine desire and actually allowing myself to be open to my own need and yearnings as like a cradle feminist, Latinx immigrant feminist. And so like anti the patriarchy.
Right.
I grew up with 3 femme women who were hell no, motherfucker. Don't
right.
Even, right. So I was their little bulldog who would bark at whoever, because that's what I learned. Don't you dare. So
right.
that's my formative sense of self in the world. And so opening up to masculine energy and to what I grew up protecting myself and those I love from, it was a whole transformative experience. And so I think that this in itself, this moment that I come back to time and time again, just like think on, was the most radically hospitable way of introducing my body, my spirit, and my way of relating sexually to someone in the masculine sense. It was like the most giving.
Mm.
So I'm grateful for that. Because I mean, I still have, I'm not a normative person in any which way. I am very fluid. And so sexually, it takes a lot of work to find folks who are able to work with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a lot. I got to take a breath. Let's take a breath. It's really what you put me in is, you know, I'm older than you. I'm 60. So when I was coming out as a lesbian in the 80s, you know, you couldn't like penetrative sex. Audre Lorde had just come out with an against sadomasochism book that other people were in. That was being, you know, shuffled around like a Bible. And that great collective, that SM collective that Pat Califia was in, they were, you know, Dorothy Allison, people were losing jobs, people were losing careers over coming. And so, and here I am, you know, I'm working at a rape crisis center. So I'm looking at sexual violence every day, and I have, you know, gang rape fantasies. I really want my partner to tie me up. I really want penetrative sex. And she absolutely won't do that because it's patriarchal. She doesn't even like my femme identity. She thinks it's a, you know, capitulating to the patriarchy. You know, I mean, I'm just like, here I am. I'm supposed to be living the liberation. You know, I finally, you know, come out. I've lost my family. And now I'm in like this, what can only be described as a fundamentalist lesbian situation. You know what I mean? I've gone from one kind of fundamentalism to another. And I remember many years later, after I'd figured that all and decided, you know, if I'm going to be queer, I'm going to be queer. You know, I'm going to be the queer I'm supposed to be. And I had this amazing, you know, sadistic top partner who loved to flog me. And I, you know, it was like, I was learning this about my body and and loving it. And like, also, I remember this one time, this is the spiritual and the sexual coming together again, where it was fairly early on in our practice together, and I'm up against a wall and, you know, they're flogging me. And I remember sort of being out of body already and thinking, why do I like this? why would I want someone to do this to me? And it's kind of like, you know, my own, everything in your life is flying around, right? And, you know, all the endorphins and everything's, you know, and I'm against this wall. And then all of a sudden I have what I think of as like the moment where it's the spiritual and the sexual and everything like kind of melds. It's like volcanic, right? Mm-hmm. And I completely lose it. And what happens in that moment is that my mother had just died about 3 months before.
Wow.
And she died of ovarian cancer, and she died in the living room of the house I grew up in. And my sister and I held vigil for her for a couple of weeks through an absolutely traumatic, but, you know, exactly how we wanted to help her die. Right. I mean, it was, I can't even describe all the things that happened in those 2 weeks. But what happened was, of course, in those 2 weeks, I couldn't feel any of them. And then we had the funeral, and then my father disowned me again. You know
what I mean? That part.
The Irish, you know, we call it the Irish goodbye. And so, I'm just in this incredibly traumatic time. And in this moment, when I'm falling apart, everything that happened between me and my mother absolutely came into view. I could feel every feeling I had over those 2 weeks. I could feel her. I could feel her, you know, the tragedy of her own turning me away. I could feel us reconnecting. I could feel the universe. You know, I could feel something so much bigger than all the colonizing shitty forces that had kept us apart our whole lives. And then we had unbelievable sex. I mean, just annihilating, amazing sex. And but going forward, I was just a different person. You know what I mean? My story, my handle on my story, my grief, so many things. And I just have to say, all of the forces helping me form myself, my identity, my spirituality, my entire life, basically it always told me none of that was possible. None of that was even on the menu. None of that existed.
Yeah.
Right. So I think when I look at even your description of what you're doing in your, you know, your program and listen to how you are moving forward with your own embodiment and your own spiritual and sex connection, like, we're doing something that kind of hasn't been done.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And so can you talk a little bit more about that, about how that's playing out today, just living in those spaces of living, you know, impossible or, you know, unforeseen kind of lives and unforeseen kind of connections.
Right. I think, when I think of the unforeseen, I'm like, all these words are coming in my head, but really I'm looking at the void, you know, like the void, the nothingness, and this culture of scarcity that we need to stop actually feeding into. And so when we actually look at what we bring, look at the innovation, the creativity, and how we create community, but beyond that, how we create our own existence, how we affirm that, I'm reminded of Gloria Anzaldúa, and her seven steps to conocimiento, which mm-hmm. is seven steps of people say knowing or consciousness or just embracing the fragments that are present within you, right? And working within those gaps and not necessarily bridging them. I mean, you could, but you could just look at them.
You
and
could just be with them.
Yeah. Just like breathe into them, bring them to a place that you could look at and you could create narrative, story make, and do it with others. Like, I feel like that is my work, really, is collective. It is allowing for those times that we have shared in private and in community to flourish as a part of our culture and to have a place there, because mm-hmm. we can't do this again, but we have to talk about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to my existence in this fluid space and time and working as a Afro-diasporic practitioner and priest in a very Christian context,
right.
That's what grounds me. I'm like, you want to talk about queering? All right, here I am.
Right.
You want to talk about trans this and trans that? Okay. Well, what? Right. You want to talk about Afro-diasporic, huh? All right, but let's talk about it in this way, through practice and where it lives in the world and how it functions alongside, in the tension and under the foot of colonialism and Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that tension is, the tension is our, like my existence is within this tension, which it makes it really liberating, actually, because I don't believe in the tension. I see it. I move through it. And then I remember it.
Mm, say that again. You see it.
I see it. I move through it. And then I remember it. And so those are only three steps. So I kind of abbreviate Ansel Dua seven. But in the same way, I'm not trying to fix anything. Mm. I'm just trying to be living in the world and existing with others and also affirming that, right? And part of why I believe in story is because that's what I was taught. That's how I got to the States. You know, in 1987, there was a lot of political uprisings happening in Lima, in Peru. Mm-hmm. And so our neighborhood was one of those neighborhoods. And I always talk about this being my first theological experience, my first connection with spirit, God, creator. And so I remember there were a bunch of people with heavy artillery surrounding our neighborhood.
Yep.
And the way that me and my three sisters were always with our mom growing up. My mom was a single mom, but in Peru, our dad was always away. And so basically we were surrounded by people with heavy artillery in our neighborhood. And all my mom did was have us move towards the back of our bed, her bed, actually, in her bedroom, and begin to do a shadow puppet show where there were barking dogs in order to have like the presence of a predator, of a big dog in the house so that people would stay away. And so, but all I saw and all my sisters saw was our mom being that creative presence of possibility.
Amazing.
And showing what it means to move beyond what is occurring and take us to a different place. And so when that happened, it created a moment of story. It created a moment of this is like the feminine divine against all the patriarchal violence and toxicities that surrounded us and protecting her own. And so that ferocity of nurture was what I'm used to. And mm-hmm. so we moved thereafter to the States. And that's another memory that is constant when I think about the ways that our spiritual energy works in creative ways and how it queers it. I mean, because I was like, my only understanding of power that actually works and worked in my formative years was feminine.
Right. Right. And didn't have anything to do with a gun or having actual positional power or state power. Mm-hmm. It was that power on the bed. Right?
Absolutely.
To just be with it, be with each other, create and survive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And surrounding myself with my family.
Just amazing. just such a beautiful story. I mean, I've got like a million jillion ways I want to go with that, which is this current political moment we're in. Maybe I'll say more about myself than I usually would about, you know, I got so sick of everybody being so obsessed with Trump and so obsessed with like, oh, the whole country has changed so radically and so badly. And I thought this is a change. Yes. But, you know, I don't know where you've been living in this country, but this looks a lot like it's looked to me for the last, you know, 40 years or whatever. And it annoyed me around the lack of imagination around it and the lack of belief in us. I mean, I was really connected to social movements at the time, and it was such a creative time. I mean, the fucking, you know, Black feminist revolution happened in the middle of Trump. I was feeling like, you know, hallelujah. You know, we can talk about white supremacy. We can talk about police violence. Like, there's actually something on the ground. There's like, it's unbelievable resistance happening. My kids are growing up in this, you know, they're seeing this rather than like sort of the, what I think of as like the Bush years were just such a wasteland around resistance. You know what I mean? Not like it wasn't happening. It was happening all over, but it was, you know, so little traction all the time. You know, it was exhausting. And so I love what you're saying about like paying attention to the right things that are going to get us through. Right. And that it's just a beautiful story about like you can't really control the guys on the street with the machine guns. How are you going to make a new way, make another way, make a way people haven't even imagined yet? Mm-hmm. And I just have so much faith. Interestingly, I'm not a Catholic anymore, you know, and I have so much to say about, you know, what the Christians did to my country, you know. But yeah, I have a lot of faith in what you're talking about, which is us together on those beds, making stories, making new ways, and really on those beds, either doing a shadow puppet thing or doing something else, right? You know, absolutely. Insisting on our pleasure.
Well, yeah.
Insisting on our connection to each other.
And in Afro-diasporic practice, you know, there's been, and throughout that Black liberative revolution that occurred during Trump and is still occurring now, people were getting used to saying ache. Right? And ashe, and ashe with an X, right? And in the many ways that we could say that word in those words, that's a Afro-diasporic symbol. And so what that means, what it actually means is the sweat on the palm of your hands. It's that life force that we bring to this earth, right? It is expressed through our sweat on our palms, but it's expressed through every single divine fluid. Our saliva, our reproductive fluids, that is ache. And so we're not saying ache as in like a symbol like we say amen. We're saying ache, it's a physical substance that each and every single one of us carry collectively, individually, spiritually, through our ancestors and in our everyday. And so when we open our palms in my tradition and we say ache, it is the ache that comes from my hand goes to yours and then interlinks with everybody else's fluid.
Mm. It's beautiful. Beautiful fluid exchange. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, when you think about all of this, and I do think it's an incredibly generative time for resistance. And it just, you know, I mean, I see that the world is on fire and we're all possibly going to hell in a handbasket. And at the same time, wow, what a moment for creative resistance and possibility. And then when I think about that in my body and what's coming, maybe you could say a little bit about like when you think about your sexual practices, your sex in your community, what are you hopeful about or what are you exploring if you want to tell us anything? Yeah. You know, what's hot for you right now? What's happening?
Oh my God. I'm blushing.
I mean, you know, and as always, there's no force sharing in social justice.
No. I'm here for it. Why else did I come? Come on.
Right. Yeah. What's happening?
I already came, Jamie. I already came. I'm here. I'm present. So let's see. I think for me, what excites me in this current time is I'm moving through this So I'm going to own all my things, which is, yes. I have been a terrible, and to a certain degree, I have hurt a lot of people in the ways that I practice monogamy. Mm. And for that reason, I'm exploring poly identity. And it's something that I'm working through currently, but I'm not working through it by prioritizing the sexual or the romantic. I'm actually prioritizing something that is inherently poly in my life, which is family. Mm-hmm. And coming from a family that always depended on the livelihood of community and hospitality, and also contributed to that, I grew up with not understanding what a father, quote unquote, figure is. I grew up understanding who, like, my neighbors who are male are. My mom's, like, really good friends who were church people and wanted to be helpful and were happened to be cis men, right? And so, like, my parents' fathers and my uncles. So I had this in abundance of relationships rather than just the one person who's going to encapsulate this figure for me. And in actuality, when my father did come back in my life, I still kind of thought of him as an uncle because that's all I knew. And so I built with him since. But when I think about, like, what my relationship to dating right now is, I'm definitely, like, reading the books. I'm definitely having the conversations and working alongside a lot of my friends who are already ethically poly and practice that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like, I'm excited about that and what that looks like in practice. Cause mm-hmm. yeah, I've only known a long-term monogamy and I'm not good at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's take a breath. Cause that was good too. So how does it feel in your body when you talk about this possible way? It feels more like you're sort of integrating the knowledge and the practices and the ways that were so crucial to your survival growing up, right? It's kind of an acknowledgement or a reconnecting, you know, and it's also like, it's brave. It's like, oh, I'm breaking something open in myself. I'm moving forward. Like, so let's take another breath. So how does your body feel when you just talk about that possibility and think about it?
Oh, it goes through, like, there is a major, like, there's, yes, openness always, but there's a flow, and there's definitely, it shapes itself within me as reemergence, right? So I'm always thinking about the ocean. So
that's so great.
Yeah. I'm thinking about when the wave hits the sand and then retreats
back. Yes. That moment.
Yeah. The little foam that sticks around.
Oh.
So that foam that sticks around, when I think about that, that has never left me. That's how I create community. And yet with romantic relationships, I created this, I have to stick to the one person and I have mm-hmm. to do this. And I don't believe in it, but yet here I am doing it badly. Right. And so yep. I think about coming back to the foam and staying a while, sitting with the foam, allowing it to actually be there and form me. So going back to who, like, how I understand relationships, they're very poly. When I think about how many people were around me and my family, it wasn't a unit. We were not tied to this, to understanding that my mom belonged to one man. It wasn't right. that at all. I grew up with a single mom who, like, belonged to the church. And that's poly.
Right.
There's a lot of people in that church.
Right. Wow.
God, who's the Trinity or whatever, if you're Christian, right? Yep. So that's only three people there. So when I think about the dynamics of what I understood as, like, a relationship that is, like, normative, it didn't exist in my upbringing. And yet here I am trying to configure that for myself. And so I think ultimately what makes me really curious is how in how I am attempting to create family, how that would play out. That's what brings in the energy of potential and the energy of creativity and the energy of just allowing for that foam to stick around a little longer. Oh,
that's just so beautiful, metaphoric and, you know, and real and in reality and in the hard, you know, hard practices. I'm really excited for you. I mean, it just sounds like a really thrilling time.
Thank you.
Hey, it's time for that quick break in the pod where I thank my sponsors. You know, it's not easy to get sexual liberation work funded, and I can't thank these generous, visionary sponsors enough. The Freeman Foundation, centering Eros and sexual liberation in the LGBTQ movement for justice. The Wild Geese Foundation, working to defend human rights and grow food sovereignty. Elizabeth Scott, a longtime mapper and philanthropist based in Minneapolis. And finally, Grindr for Equality, leveraging the power of our social and sexual connections for LGBTQ human rights around the world. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please head over to iTunes and give us a zillion stars. Send a link to your friends. Talk us up. If you'd like to respond to the show or stay connected, find us on social media under Just Sex Podcast and Desire Mapping. And if you have questions for me about your desire map or comments, you can email me at justsexpod@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. I can see we're in harmony. Looks like we both agree on what to do.